My World, a panel game devised by Tony Frine and Edward J. Mason. And here to introduce the team is Michael O'Donnell.
Thank you, and welcome to today's exploration of the vocabularies of Dilys Powell and Frank Muir, and Antonia Fraser and Dennis Norden. We start with our traditional rummage through the English dictionary in search of illumination. Frank, what's the meaning of a fizzgig? F-I-Z-G-I-G.
Well, that's a good old word, isn't it?
Mm.
Ooh.
Well, two meanings. Either one.
There are many, actually, aren't there? It's a kind of dud firework or shell which goes out of a thing. It's kind of silly, nonsensical idea. It's silly, nonsensical girl.
Mm. Yes, those are the two groups that I meant. A frivolous gadabout woman, the Oxford.
The words were trembling on my lips.
And it's a small firework. Apparently, it was an Elizabethan firework. I didn't know they had small fireworks and squibs. Elizabethan squib. Antonia, Tomally. T-O-M-A-L-L-E-Y.
Tomally. Yes, it's indeed difficult. Even Dennis is looking puzzled.
It
is. It's a Carib word, and it is
something you eat.
Yes. Well, I think you eat it. It's certainly part of something that you eat. Whether you actually eat the tamale, yes, you must eat the tamale because I've heard it. I've heard it described.
I've heard the expression hot tamales, and they sell them in the street.
I think we'll give you a mark for the hot tamale. Mm. If you can tell us what it is, or
if it's Caribs, unless they were not exactly vegetarian, it might be a part of our own bodies, might it not?
Wow.
It's a fruit.
It's the green liver of a cooked lobster. One is as simple as that.
Well, that's their story, but I would never believe
it. Do you eat it? You do, don't you?
I tell you, it's called the fat, isn't it? I've heard it called the fat of the lobster, but it's only in American lobster, I think, you get green livers. I don't know why. I'm not feeling as well as I did when we started.
Can we move on to
Dilys and aspergillum, or aspergillum, depending on which master taught me at school.
Have you eaten?
Only in season.
I think you swing it.
Yes.
I think it's a sprinkler.
It is indeed. A particular sort of sprinkler. Can you be more specific?
A cursor.
Not a garden sprinkler.
No, I'm trying to associate it with the church.
It is.
Is that right?
That's right, yes.
So it sprinkles something in a church?
Yes.
It sprinkles water?
Yes.
Holy water?
Yes.
Any
holy
other kind of water?
Water.
I can't think of anything else that sprinkles in
the church. Yes, well, I think that it's really a brush. That was what I was after. That the priests, when they're doing the asperges, swing upside down and sprinkle the water off the end of it over the congregation.
It's upside down.
The priest. Maybe I could rephrase that. They swing the brush upside down. Dennis, Dellism. B-D-E-L-L-I-S-M.
Are you sure you're not passing coded messages to a foreign power through this?
Well,
paper?
I could well be today. The only clue I can give you is that I should know the meaning of this word because of my murky past, but I didn't until I was given the script for this program.
Bedell.
Yes.
B-D-E-L-L. It's awfully good for Scrabble, isn't it, a word? B-D, they'd never believe you. You'd get the challenge, you'd get the marks for the challenge when you try. It's a medical word, obviously, and it's something when something goes wrong with your bedell.
It's a practice of using bedells, in fact.
Yes, well, I think it's for the enjoyment, my
They were used quite a lot in hospitals at the turn of the century. There was a jar of Bedell's on the shelf when I was a medical student in 1946. Yes. Now comes the time when I'm going to give you the quotations, of which Frank and Dennis are going to give you the true origins later in the programme. And Frank's quotation is, "I want to say thanks for that lovely weekend." And Dennis's is, "Hitch your wagon to a star." Dennis is going to tell us where it really came from. Now we come to a round entitled Something in Common. Frank, what have the following got in common? A crotchet, a Carrie Witchet, a quiblin, and a quiblin.
They're not dance movements in the Tudor woggle dance, are they?
They ought to be, really. Yeah, I think that's worth a mark for invention. There's something that you really indulge in. You're a good man for an occasional quibblin, not a mention of wibblin. And I suspect before this programme is over, both... Well, Dennis has probably given us a crotchet, and you
just... in the 18th century, the word for a pun was a quibble.
That's bang in the centre of the target.
They're literary expressions.
No, they're all... if you quit when you're winning, you'll get your marks now, because they're colloquial synonyms for a pun. Antonia, what have the following got in common? Theophile, or is it Theophily Wagstaff, William Makepeace Thackeray, and Michelangelo Titmarsh? They're all members of my club, I might say, but that's not really the answer.
They used to get together regularly on a Thursday to discuss which of them had the silliest name.
That could well be true. I think that gets a mark, because that's...
They're all the same man.
Yes, Frank has got it. Frank gets two marks.
No, because it's a pseudonym.
They're all Thackeray.
The plush.
Those are the two pseudonyms that he used. I must say, I didn't know that. In the Garrick Club, to which I was referring, he and Dickens were both members, and they never spoke to one another. Now they've got their busts in the club, and they're in different rooms facing in opposite directions. I'm sure it's intentional. Dillis, what have these names got in common? Or these people got in common? Mary Powell, Catherine Woodcock, and Elizabeth Minshall.
The cooks.
Or in the same novel.
No, they were real people.
Real people. Mm. They were all hanged.
No. they lived at a time when there was quite a lot of it about, but...
They were all witches.
No.
Are they literary?
Do you know?
They have literary connections, or they had literary
they
connections.
They had. They all protested about being hanged.
Afterwards.
No,
I'm
married. Is it to do with marriage to someone?
Yes. Can I pass it? I would think it is. Pass it to the other side.
They all married the same man.
Not at the same time. Successively. They were successive wives.
Oh, okay, I've got it. It's Milton. I should have known all along.
Well done.
Stupid me.
So the marks go to Antonio. Dennis, what are the following got in common? A dingbat, a doohickey, a doofer, and a gizmo.
Well, they're all doobries.
Mm.
Yeah? They're all gizmo, doohickey. They're all names for something that you can't remember the name of, or the thing hasn't got a name and is unidentifiable.
That is another meaning for fizzgig.
Mm.
Fizzgig.
Funnily enough, yes. It's just when you can't remember the word, I can't be bothered to read. Have you got a thing in me, Bob?
Yeah. Anyway, full marks to Dennis. We move on to more familiar territory, a round of famous lines of poetry. I'm going to give you a line leading in to a much-quoted line. Frank, what follows, beneath the rule of men entirely great...
Is that the famous line?
That's the infamous one.
Beneath the rule
of men entirely great,
they also serve who only stand and wait.
one mark for... It's not it, but it's deceptive in that it doesn't rhyme. It's from the play Richelieu by the man who wrote, you know, Father.
Yes.
Bulwer-Lytton.
The great, the rule of men entirely great.
The pen is mightier than the sword.
It doesn't rhyme.
I know.
You're scared.
Anyway, what about his word processor? You can't talk to him about pens now.
Yes, the word processor is mightier than the pen. Antonio, what lines follow upon... He went like one that hath been stunned and is of sense forlorn.
Because he fears a fearful fiend doth close behind him tread. Is it John Gilpin, just as well?
No, it isn't. It's
Dillis.
Dillis, tell us.
Is it a sadder, the wiser man?
Yes.
He rose the morrow morn.
Well done. Oh. Well done, Dillis. Now, Dillis, see if you can do as well with your own line. In the spring, a livelier iris changes on the burnished dove. In the spring, a livelier
fancy lightly turns the thoughts of love.
Well done. Your friend got it for you. Mark to Dillis and Frank. It's in the spring, a young man's fancy lightly turns to thoughts of love. Dennis, this is only a half line.
I've given away this evening. It's just, you know, it's like being at the dentist. It'll all be over in a while.
You do get half a mark.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have forgot much, Thanara.
Ah, yes. I am weary of a something, love. I've been faithful to thee in my fashion, which was. There's none of those bits, is
no.
It?
No. I have been faithful to thee in my fashion. That's the one that recurs all the way through, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's called Quaderectum Estrandum.
It's Latin for I will be what I was, or I was what I... Eram comes into it.
It doesn't rhyme with Rhett Butler.
Scarlet for my... Yes. Thank
it
you.
Does, it doesn't rhyme with Scarlet, but that's what's a heavy-booted clue.
Doesn't rhyme with it. What was the half line again?
I have forgot much, Sinara. Or Sinara, as she's called in the United States. And she would certainly have been called in the United States in the second half of this line.
Yes, no. I'll give
nobody?
You
no. I didn't know either. It's extraordinary because it doesn't seem to fit in. I have forgot much, Sinara. Gone with the wind.
Oh.
Another medical one. Yeah. Now we move on to uncompleted cliches, which does everybody know the Miles and the Gopaline catechism of cliches? Flann O'Brien used to write this column in the Irish Times under the name of Miles and the Gopaline. He used to have a catechism of cliches. So I thought I'd put these cliches in his catechismic form. So, Frank, what is, by hallowed tradition, forever incontrovertible? An incontrovertible
fact.
Yes. You see,
amber.
People in this program are given to discarding cliches. That's why they find it difficult to think of them straight off. Antonia, what is it of which we always become aware painfully?
Something that's obvious.
Exactly. Dillis, what is invariably ongoing?
Time.
Situation.
Situation.
Or for politicians,
yes. Situation. Ongoing
situation.
And Dennis, what is inevitably a major...
Major catastrophe.
That's it. That's it.
Doom.
Road ahead.
Full marks all round for the cliches. The Miles of Gopaline things used to be like, is a man ever hurt in a motor smash? No, he sustains an injury.
Yes.
He used to produce great streams of them. Now we come to the moment in the programme when Frank and Dennis are going to give us the real origins of those quotations I gave you earlier on. First, Frank, tell us the real origin of I want to say thanks for that lovely weekend.
I want to say thanks for that lovely weekend. Have you, Dave? Actually, I won't be weekending in Corsica next year for a change. No, I'm going to France. We found the most wonderful hotel that really brought back all that you really used to go to France for. The food, the hospitality from the innkeeper, the joy of a really provincial French place. It's all gone, isn't it? I mean, you go to a place in France, and it's got glass doors with credit cards stuck all over them, showing that cash needn't pass, and you can hear canned music, and it's all wrong. And the food is industrial soup, reconstituted from 10-litre drums from the factory, and it's all... But found this place. Don't know where it was to start with, middle of France somewhere, in a valley. I was driving back from Nice, and we got lost. Well, it wasn't my fault, actually. The right trafficator, the bulb, went. So to be on the safe side, we could only turn left, which makes navigation a little bit more complicated. And eventually, when night came, we found ourselves in this tiny little market town in a valley. And in fact, the sign outside described the name of the village, which was La Vallée, twinned with Catford. And there were several hotels we could have stayed at, but they all had glass doors with credit cards stuck on the outside and slight sounds of canned music. And then we saw this one, the Hotel de la Vallée, and it was France as we used to remember it. The proprietor came out and we said, we've got a room, and he looked at us with loathing, and eventually said, "Wah." So he said, thank you, can you take the bags up? Because he didn't shift a finger. But after about 20 minutes waiting by the car, his grandmother appeared, who was 4 foot tall and bent at an acute angle with rheumatism. And she picked up our heavy cases in her claws and disappeared into the... We went inside and there was a bar with an elderly gentleman drinking what appeared to be tomato juice. It eventually turned out to be the local red wine, which isn't very transparent and is thickish. And then we said, what time is dinner? And he said, there's nobody else there except this old man. And he said, 8 o'clock. So at nine, we were still hanging around. And eventually we went into the dining room, which had three small tables, all covered with paper tablecloth, dimpled like a bishop's knees, held to the table with clips, and an illegible menu in mauve, and an upright, very old upright grand piano with the marquetry flaking off like sunburn. And after a while, the proprietor arrived with a pad and said, "Soup." We said, "Yes, thank you." But anyway, we had soup, which looked marvellous. We were very hungry, and I dabbed the spoon in, and immediately ricocheted up in the air again, because the plates have very thick bottoms, the good old French plates, and they're cold anyway, so you're left with a bowl of soup which is in fact a millimetre in depth and stone cold. We were getting back to real French cooking. And then we had the steak, fillet steak it was, and oh, it was marvellous. None of this factory stuff, none of this deep frozen portion-controlled steak. It was a real fillet steak. It was sort of black on the edges, and it changed very rapidly to a sort of pale mauve colour. I think it was running round the farmyard about an hour and a half beforehand. So we ate some of the burnt bits and gave the rest to the dog under the table. And then we waited 3/4 of an hour and then got some cold grey peas. And then we had some cheese. Oh, it was one. It's what French food used to be in hotels. We went up to our bedroom, and there was the bed with the cardboard walls. We could hear coughing, and it was the old man, 5 bedrooms away, picking his teeth. And it was a rather difficult to see inside the bedroom because it had the French provincial hotel, 4-watt bulb in that frilly glass shade above it. And it was so lovely to do away with those awful foam pillows. This had the good old French bolster. My wife and I tried to shift it, and we couldn't lift it. You know, the sand was that real good old heavy stuff. And in the morning, we were afraid we might sleep in, and no, not a bit of it. It was, as usual with all those good old hotels, it was next to the shunting yard, and it was... I suddenly said to my wife, that's where we are. It's the Dadoin. And we got the bill. And we got the bill the following morning. I said to the proprietor, this almost silent brute, I said, it's so marvellous to find the real French hospitality as it's always been. And the food, as French food was always. And silently, without saying anything, he handed me the bill. It was 110 quid. The equivalent. I said, it's a bit much, isn't it? And he said, well, you had the fillet steak. So I said, well, if fillet steak's all that difficult to come by in La Vallée. He said, no, but English tourists are. So we want to go back. We want to go back and have Friday, Saturday and Sunday there, because that is the France we remember. But it is rather expensive. So I'm not going to Corsica this year. I want to save francs for that La Vallée weekend.
Thank you, Frank. I'm sure the French Tourist Board will be grateful for your commendation. And now, Dennis, give us the true origin of Hitch Your Wagon to a Star.
Well, what that quotation immediately brings back to mind is a neighbour of mine called Mrs. Thora Tidmarsh. Now, this Mrs. Tidmarsh is an impressive lady, very prominent in local government, community affairs, and round the hips. And even if that Bolshy schoolmaster at number 42 does refer to her as Lucretia Bourgeois, nevertheless, you've still got to admit that not only was she the first person in Northwest 11 to make her own yogurt, but her husband is still the only man who puts on a dinner jacket to watch Play of the Month. However, what Mrs. T's energies have always been mainly directed towards is trying to upgrade what might be called the popular image of our neighbourhood. Because, you see, the place where Mrs. Tidmarsh elected to build her expensive and tastefully over-decorated home is that area of London's concrete jungle that's called Golders Green. Now, it has to be acknowledged that, however salubrious and well supplied with shoe shops Golders Green may be, nevertheless its name very rarely evokes those immediate associations with gentility and social rank as does, say, Tunbridge Wells or Weybridge or even North Wembley. Come to that. And that's why ever since she took up residence, Mrs. Tidmarsh's chief concern has been to try and devise ways to elevate the neighbourhood's social status. And to that end, I've found myself already conscripted into such doomed enterprises as the Golders Green Highland Games, the Golders Green International Arts Festival and Eisteddfod, even on one melancholy occasion, an attempt to twin Golders Green with the town of La Vallée. But Thora Tidmarsh, she's never been the type to let a mere disaster upset her, and nothing illustrates that better than her most recent idea for propelling Golders Green up the social ladder. Because summoning a group of us to her house, a place where, I give you my word, the bathroom cabinet is bigger than our spare room, she issued her latest edict. One sure way for the name of our place of residence to be imprinted on the social consciousness of a nation was to bottle and market our own local mineral water. See, what hadn't escaped her attention, you see, was that all the places that currently do that, you know, places like Malvern and Buxton and Sherborne, well, the other attribute that they share is an unquestionable reputation for social superiority. And what Thora reckoned was, you see, that by placing ourselves in their league, by having our name on a mineral water label, some of that social cachet would sort of rub off. Well, it was an interesting theory. In practice, We found one major snag about trying to popularise bottles of Golders Green water. Golders Green doesn't have any of its own local mineral water. Well, there was a sort of natural spring there once, but sometime in the early part of the century it got built on. There's another shoe shop, actually. we asked the present owner if we could try drilling down a bit, but he'd been using his cellar to store unsold stock, so it would have meant excavating under something like 8 gross pair of Italian flip-flops. we did manage, actually, to draw up one bucketful, but after Mrs. Tidmarsh made that teacher from number 42 drink a trial glass, he walked in a crouch for 3 days. What she'd forgotten, of course, you see, was that the upmarket reputation those other towns enjoy only came about because they'd had suitable water there to begin with. The ensuing prestige was simply due to the liquid's availability. So the lesson, therefore, would seem to be that if your hometown is about to market litre-sized bottles for the sole purpose of goosing up its social esteem, then it would seem a wise move to effect a preliminary tie-up with some already established watering place. Or, as Emerson so neatly anticipated, hitch your flagon to a spa.
Thank you, Dennis. I'm sure the Golders Green Tourist Board will be grateful for your commendation. It only remains for me to announce that this week's winners, by a whisker, are Frank and Dillis, or by a moustache, I should say. But Dennis and Antonia will have a chance in our next programme to have back at them again. Until then, goodbye.
In My Word, Michael O'Donnell was in the chair. The questions were compiled by Peter Moore, and the programme was produced for the BBC by Tony Shrine and Pete Atkin. You've been listening to My Word from the BBC, heard each week at this time. This is the WFMT Fine Arts Network.